Tahura ki Gulf Marine Park, ko te pātaka kai o Tikapa Moana, te Moana Nui Atoi, is 1.2 million hectares in size with more than 40 pest-free islands and 6 marine reserves. This seascape lies on the east coast of the Tāmaki Makaurau and Waikato regions, stretching down to the eastern coastline of the Coromandel Peninsula to Waihi. Kia ora, I'm Kiane Matatasipu, the host of Hauraki Gulf Kōrero, a podcast established by the Hauraki Gulf Forum. Here you will be introduced to kaitiaki of Te Moana Nui Atoi, Tikapa Moana, to discuss the state of the Gulf, and explore the many ways in which these groups and individuals are taking action to achieve a healthy, thriving marine environment. Tēnā koutou katoa and welcome back to another episode of Hauraki Gulf Kōrero. Today we have Lia Ngāmane with us. Tēnā koe.
Tēnā koe.
It is wonderful to talk to you today, and we're going to be focusing on a number of different areas and experiences that you have had in and around Tikapa Moana and in and around the Hauraki Gulf. I wanted to start with you first sharing with us a little bit about who you are and your relationship to Tikapa Moana, which is also known in your whānau in and around your rohe as Te Taitama Wahine.
Kia ora. I think my connect to Tikapa Moana as an individual started since I was a child, going out fishing daily, going out with the aunties. I always remember every year we'd do a great big visit, trip out to the islands from Coromandel. My aunties would take me onto the islands, show me all the rongoā, the places to get kai, etc. there. And Dad would always take us fishing. So my father was an avid fisherman. He fished for his survival. He was 96 when he passed away. He was born in 1919, so he lived off the sea for survival. The little place that I come from is a place called Pōhawa on in the Colville Harbour in northern Coromandel, and right next door to our papakāinga, there are pōtaka fish traps made of stone. And my father never knew the exact date of those, but that they were ancient. And since that time, my family, my granddad built another pōtaka next to it back in his day, and then my cousin. And so, you know, we'd also been kaitiaki of those places, caught every single species known to men in those men and women in those pools. So fishing was kind of in my blood. As Ngāti Tamatera, as our iwi, and my hapu of Ngāti Pari, we were a fisher people. Our transportation route to our settlements was through Tikapa Moana, and we seasonally occupied. So yeah, it's been in my blood and in my family's blood really forever. And I guess when I got a little bit older, I think it was in 1990, had an opportunity to connect back with my iwi and some of the mahi that they were doing. And at that point in time, it was the Hauraki Māori Trust Board. They had opposed, and it was before the Resource Management Act came into being, that opposed the dumping of Ports of Auckland dredging off Tiri Tiri Mātangi. So I walked into that as a 20-something-year-old and had the opportunity to, I guess, listen to some of our rangatira of the time, like Tōko Renata Te Taniwha, Betty Williams, who was a founding member of the Hauraki Gulf Forum, Hariata Gordon, Tai Moana Tūrua, all giving evidence about the significance of Tikapa Moana and the impact that activity would have. Suffice to say, they didn't succeed in that court case, but I think it provided momentum where eventually the dredgings were stopped I think, with the political pressure that came post that. And at the very least, the dredgings went out of the inner Gulf of Te Kapa Moana, and I guess in this Auckland central space. But of course, they moved over to Ripanga Kuvia Island, which is also still in our Moana. So I guess that battle, you know, continued on till the most recent decisions around stopping the dredging there on one space. So those kind of things, I guess, influence not only my love of the sea and fishing from my family, my whānau, but also coupled with some of the politicising events in my youth that really crystallised a pathway for me in terms of the mahi I wanted to do. So from that point, I worked in my iwi authority at that time for up to the Resource Management Act. The Resource Management Act came in. There was nobody that would take on that portfolio. So I said, pick me. Foolish mistake at the time, but not in the long term, I think. And so I picked up all that. So with that first, I guess, generation of that act, came a whole plethora of plans, conservation management strategies, regional policy statements, coastal plans, and all of that. And so I was kind of engaged in that space. And I got to a point where I felt, because I dropped out of high school, dropped out of university early on the scene, I decided to go back as an adult student a planning degree in Auckland. And I did that because I'd had so many bad encounters with planners at the time, and that they were speaking a different language than me in relation to what I was trying to advocate for. And so I had to go back and become one in order to be able to then, I guess, have some additional tools for my iwi in terms of that whole environmental space. So that's my background. And through that period and through working with the iwi, I had an opportunity to sit on conservation boards. I was quite young at the time. I think collectively I've probably sat about 5 terms on conservation boards, both in Waikato and Auckland. And then, of course, the Hauraki Gulf Forum I was part of for a while, both as a technical officer and as a member. And I do quite a bit of other mahi around, really in the environmental space and iwi development space. I picked up a job with the Department of Conservation last year. That was my first time ever working for a government department. So my whole career has been working in iwi development and iwi environmental aspirations.
Mm. With your lifetime of experience in and around the Moana and the varying roles that you have been able to play and participate in, right from being a tamariki, being a tamariki out on the water with your whānau and fishing and gathering kaimoana, right through to holding roles that decision-maker roles that are influential roles in and around policy. What have you seen over those years within the Moana, within Te Kapa Moana? What changes have you seen, and what would you describe as the current state of the Hauraki Gulf?
Gosh, I think it's changed. There's less of what there was when I was a kid. You know, and I think everybody has those examples that you actually don't see today. The kaimoana is depleted, the fisheries is depleted, the impact of the catchment and the sedimentation and the runoff and contamination in both the catchments, the awa, Piako and the Waiho, and urban areas. the plus more people, they've all contributed to, I guess, a moana that is not in a healthy state.
Mm.
And I always remember Tōku Orinata saying, you know, what is it to be said as kaitiaki of a, you know, if you can't do what you need to do to put things right. And I guess, yeah.
When we think and talk about kaitiakitanga, one of the tools that we have as Māori is rahui, and that is a tool that we use in and around our customary practice of the moana and as a tool of kaitiakitanga. The te mata rahui that was laid down by Ngāti Tamanui Te Rā is one that you were particularly involved in. Can you tell me a little bit about what that rahui is, why it came about, and what the purpose of that particular customary practice has been in that area?
So it's Ngāti Tama Te Rā, mm-hmm. and I guess the issue of kaimoana depletion around Hauraki, around the Coromandel Peninsula, around Tāmaki, has resulted in mahinga mā taitai that used to be used for centuries by our iwi hapū whānau no longer being there, or in a state of depletion that if something isn't done about it, there won't be any going forward.
Mm.
And I think that's a feeling felt by all iwi and hapū of the Hauraki Gulf. All of those pressures descend, particularly because we live in a, you know, highly urbanised area, a highly urbanised rohe. So if I just think back to my involvement or my experience in rahui, probably back in the late 90s, all of Hauraki iwi, the 12 iwi of Hauraki, were concerned at generally the shellfish depletion across the Coromandel Peninsula. And so via the Hauraki Māori Trust Board at the time, which was a collective of the 12 iwi, put in place a what's called a Section 186A closure under the Fisheries Act, which was really a response to shellfish depleting, not losing our kaimoana grounds, and also not really knowing why. Was it harvesting? Was it sedimentation coming in through the catchment? So there was a whole lot of unknowns about it, but it felt like it was important. I think it was 1998. It was put around an entire area, and if you know the Thames Coast very well, from about, I think it was about Thornton's Bay, which is just south of Te Piru, as far as Kerita, and Kerita is when you are just about to hit the hills before you get to Coromandel Township. So there was a rahui, a traditional rahui placed over that area by our kaumātua at the time, and followed with a Section 186A closure, and which is a temporary closure.
Mm.
And so they continued to put temporary closures over right up until 2006, from 1998 to 2006. In 2006, if I recall, the minister of the time did not agree to another one because, of course, Section 186A is a temporary closure. It's not intended as a permanent tool, and there were other frameworks for that. So suffice to say, that's where it ended. And from 2006 until December 2019, which is when Ngāti Tama Te Rā decided to take some action over some of its grounds within that area. Things hadn't nothing had been done between 2006 and 2019. So, yeah, we were just getting, it was real simple. We were just getting really concerned. Summer was coming up, and we know that we get an influx of people on the Coromandel Peninsula in summer. We knew our grounds were popular Kai Moana grounds for the community and us, and that they used to get highly used, highly harvested every weekend. So we kind of drew a line in the sand and said, we just have to do something. And it was quite timely because, if I recall, in December 2019, the Minister of Fisheries, which was Minister Nash at the time, was visiting Hauraki. So Ngāti Tamatera kind of thought, right, we'll put together a request to have a Section 186A closure put on by the ministry, but we will also organise to go and do what we need to do to put a rahui on. So, yeah, I guess I was a little bit cheeky and we tabled our request at a hui with a
cheeky
number
or clever. Hauraki iwi.
And we talked to it there, and he acknowledged the concern and he acted quick. He showed real leadership. I just guess it was right time, right place, right person. And so that was around December. And by early January, being mindful of the onslaught of the summer visitors, we had a temporary closure in place for 6 months. Of course, I think there was some fast-tracking that got done on that, which we weren't complaining about. But we knew that that six-month closure would run out in July of 2020, and we had to resubmit a new closure during that period so that when the six-month closure cut off, a two-year closure came into being. And so we did that, and we got granted the two-year closure in July. Yeah. July 2020.
How important has it been to get buy-in and support from those outside of the iwi? Because we know for rahui, definitely there will be iwi whānau hapū support in those spaces, but it's not always that we get the support of our wider community. And as you say, especially during those summer months, there are lots of people who flock down to those beaches. How important has it been to garner that support, and what sort of support have you had from the wider community on this rahui?
Kia ora. It's critical. I think back in the day with me, like on a personal level, I used to kind of challenge everything and perhaps not value the value of relationships. And I guess in the lead up to putting the rahui and the closure on, I had had this elderly gentleman from Te Mata, Pākehā, retired, who had, you know, over maybe a course of 2 years, called me, talked to me about his concerns. And so we've managed to, I guess, develop a little bit of a relationship around that. And so I have to say, at that time when they were frustrated, they circulated a petition wanting the shellfish beds to be closed to. This is the community of Tapu where the rahui is put in place. And, you know, all that came into being at the time when we had the 6 month closure, because I think, you know, we were able to show the community supports us. Here's their petition with all their signatures. And I think that got us over the line with that. The other support we got support from our local council, from the Hauraki iwi, of course, Hauraki Gulf Forum. So I think they came on board and supported in the submission process. But it was the local community at Te Mata and Tapu where the rahui are that were key, and we maintain those relationships with those people. Mm. It's a positive one. They're mostly all retired people. So for me, that's an opportunity too, because they keep their eyes on the place. And if they need help, they call a couple of our local kaitiaki up for help. We've got signs in place and everything now, so it's not so, I guess, stressful as it used to be. Because it's pretty stressful managing something when you don't have support. And there was a period of time where it was really us running around on the beach when people would go out to just, make them aware. And with the support of the fisheries officers, that increased their presence in the area.
We've had this rahui in place now since 2019. Have you begun to see changes in the moana, or is it still too early to see those changes?
Well, I think what we have found from just some initial surveys are that there are a couple of good pipi grounds, good size, that have appeared to have improved. Mm. But, one of the issues, one of the reasons for putting the rahui enclosure on too was because there had been no monitoring of those places since 2006. And so apart from what people could see anecdotally, visually, going and harvesting, et cetera, and the flood events that would have happened around that time, nobody really knew the state.
Mm.
What were the state? And so really it's the surveying that's been done and the monitoring and that will kind of give us some results around that. And it's too early at the moment.
And having the ability to observe is huge, because observation in terms of our mātauranga Māori and our customary practice in and around the moana is a really significant part, to look, to see, to recognise the tohu, the signs, to be able to monitor, where pipi beds are and then where they've moved to, what else they've attracted into that space, and to monitor that over a number of years really gives us a great indication of not just, oh yes, there is more kaimoana or there are more shellfish growing in these particular areas, but it gives us such a greater understanding of the taiao, how the taiao was responding to certain times of the year, certain impacts and events that are happening, if there is new, housing that is taking place, how the runoff from that can affect. And unless you have that opportunity to slow down and observe, you really can't get the information that you need out of it. And from a Western science perspective, we talk about monitoring and quantitative data, but this is exactly that from a Te Ao Māori perspective. What, in your opinion, how important are these customary tools when we're looking at restoring our moana?
They're critical, but something else that's critical too is because I think if I look at our situation,
mm-hmm.
of course that knowledge, that mātauranga, was held by a number of people in our iwi, but not necessarily known by the iwi.
Right.
So there's a whole lot of reconnecting that it's not just a straightforward thing when you go and make a stand, place a rahui, and now have the obligation and the responsibility to carry it through. And carrying it through is a reconnecting to be done. And there's a framework to be built so that Western science is, I guess, put in its context.
Mm.
And the value of the mātauranga that we have, the tools that we have, the knowledge that we have based on that, I guess, practical observation day in, day out, need to be brought back together again. And I see it as just one of the fallouts of colonisation, really. It's about restoring what we have and making that, I guess, sustain into the future. So I think there's a part of it that's about building up and preserving those taonga for better use towards the well-being of te kapa moana. But there's equally a rectifying of the current system to ensure that, I guess, when you do put in place something in a rāhui, its integrity stands from a tikanga point of view. Because more often than not, capacity is always an issue with an iwi too, and working on these are daily occurrences. But there's a whole rebuilding to be done in that space too. And that's not going to happen in 1 or 2 years. And I think the other thing is that ahui that we put down at Tamata and Tapu on the East Thames coast, we knew that that was only the start of something else, because we know in order to get serious about addressing the depletion of our mahinga, mātaitai, of our taonga species within te kapa, we have to work in a coordinated fashion. And just so that we know collectively that we are making a difference in our own little spaces. So, for example, when we close Te Mata and Tapu, we knew that that may mean more pressure would be put on another iwi or hapu in another space on the peninsula, because we've closed this accessible space. So that's still hanging and needing to be addressed, I think, by the 12 iwi of Hauraki and by the 19 plus iwi of the Hauraki Gulf.
Yeah, of Tamaki. When we look at rāhui, when we look at rāhui and we look at the legal side of it and the closing of fishing grounds, it comes under a fishing act, a fishing law. Is this the right place for it to sit? Is there another way that we haven't yet discovered or thought about, or another tool that we haven't yet used that would be better suited for things like rāhui as opposed to having it under the fishing laws that we currently have in Aotearoa?
Yeah, the particular provision, like the reason we chose that particular provision was because it could potentially have quick effect, like not too much red tape, not too much, you know, it could be done. And that's what we needed. There was a sense of urgency for us. It's a temporary closure. That's what the provision says. That's never going to fit the concept of a rāhui. And nor is it going to fit long-term protection of shellfish, because by its very nature, it's temporary. There are customary fishing regulations and that whole space that I guess I can't talk too much about, because none of that is rolled out in te kapa moana. Let's just say, I guess years ago, it just came to a stop. And I've got to say, it's something I always have been telling the concurrent, like it's Fisheries New Zealand today, but it was something else, you know, a decade ago, etc. I've always been asking, well, where is all that to be unlocked? I think a lot of it's all just too complicated. But certainly the current provisions that we used was in no way, shape or form about integrating a tikanga focus. It was about utilising a legal tool to support the tikanga of the rāhui.
The rāhui that Ngāti Tamatera, aroha mai, because I had said Tamanui Tera earlier, that Ngāti Tamatera have laid down in Yorohe has become the tuakana of other rāhui that have taken place in and around Te Kapa Moana, one of those now also being on Waiheke. Do you see rāhui as a tool that can and should be used to help restore the Māori of the moana, which is one of the drivers that everyone I've interviewed so far across varying aspects of Te Kapa Moana, Te Moana Nui O Toi, the Hauraki Gulf, everybody wants to get to that one point of a healthy, thriving moana. Do you see rāhui as a key tool that can and should be used right across the varying areas of the moana to help us restore the Māori? Or to help the moana restore its own Māori, I should say.
Well, absolutely.
Mm.
It sits outside of legislation, of course, but I think what it is a powerful statement by iwi hapu of an area that enough's enough, I guess.
Mm.
And for me, any dahui that are put in within Te Kapa Moana in areas that need it, the more the merrier. And it's kind of nice to see the Waiheke one because, of course, we're quite close as Ngāti Tamatera to Ngāti Pāua. Ngāti Pāua married Tukutuku, granddaughter of Tamatera, and from there came Ngāti Pāua. So that's a natural connect. We've got some people on Waiheke that were also involved at Tapu Tamata. So, yeah, no, I think it's great and I hope there's more. In fact, what I aspire to is that there's a conversation about the whole of the Hauraki Gulf and how and what that might look like and where rāhui might fit in that context in terms of protection.
And that could be quite groundbreaking if we think about a rāhui across the Hauraki Gulf as a whole, or, you know, concepts of rāhui in and around spaces across the whole Hauraki Gulf.
Well, you know, I think some of those tools were discussed, were talked about, debated with iwi in the lead up to the Hauraki Gulf Marine Spatial Plan.
Mm.
So some of that mahi, some of that thinking. So the Marine Spatial Plan, I guess, if you look back to have a look at what are the purpose of the Hauraki Gulf Forum, or what's the purpose of the Hauraki Gulf Marine Park Act, one of them is the integrated management of the Hauraki Gulf and its catchments and islands. And the Marine Spatial Plan, Tai Timu Tai Pari, was an attempt at that and was an attempt at, I guess, a partnering, a co-governance, a partnership between iwi and the Crown in doing that. And they talked about all that, some of the tools available under current legislation are clunky, don't fit the purpose. If you look at, for example, some of the marine protected area legislation, it's out of date, and that's something that everybody acknowledges.
Mm.
So, yeah, I'm hoping from all that mahi and the leadership of the Department of Conservation too that there will come a driver of something new.
I want to talk to you a little bit about the Hauraki Gulf Forum and the mahi and the role that you played within the forum for many, many years. And as you said, you've had time there as both a technical officer and as a representative sitting on the forum. And one of the, you mentioned co-governance and the importance of co-governance and just in your corridor just now. And one of the significant moments of your time on the forum was you took a resolution to the forum for a co-governance model. Unfortunately, at that time, it was defeated by a slim margin, 10, you know, lost 10 to 11. It was just so close. But at that time, it wasn't an option. And now when we move ahead to, you know, we're now in 2021, the Hauraki Gulf Forum has a co-governance model. So it has moved on since then. Tell me a little bit about back in that time when you first put that resolution forward, what was the importance of having a co-governance model for the Hauraki Golf Forum? What could you see in how that would be successful for the outcomes of the Hauraki Golf?
I think in short, the whole point of the co-governance was to recognise the mana and the kaitiaki role of iwi alongside the crown, that there were tools, there were mātauranga, there were practices and there was knowledge about tikapa moana that sat with the iwi that would contribute to affecting change for the better for tikapa moana. So it wasn't rocket science for me. It was just acknowledging which party brings to the picture. And at the time, I guess that got a reaction from some in the community too. Can never forget a time where Hobson's Choice Mr. Brash was sitting in a Hauraki Golf Forum audience watching the deliberations. But, you know, elections came and went, local government elections, and I guess the right mix of people came after me to affect that. And if I'd go back, and I can only use, I guess, the Hauraki example that Ngāti Tamatera was a part of, when the Hauraki Gulf Marine Park bill or concept was first being mooted back in 1990, before the legislation, etc. A number of iwi of the Hauraki Gulf were expressing what their aspirations were and how they saw the management of the Gulf, and are saying the same things as I was saying in the co-governance environment decades later. And so it was really just being true to what those old people saw as the original intent from their side, and making a statement about co-governance was about trying to come back to that original understanding or aspiration. Because if you don't say it, you're not going to aspire to it. So for me, it was worth harping on about it for the terms that I did, because it's there now. And the other pleasing thing as part of that is that there are now two co-chairs. So that was always an unspoken understanding at the outset of the Hauraki Golf Forum, and it was Ngāti Manuhiri Kaumātua Lally Haddon that sat as the first chair alongside, I think it was Phil Warren at the time, but it was never formally said. So now that it's formally a co-chair, that's a bonus too. Yeah.
Looking in from the outside and having the experience that you've had in working towards this co-chairship on the forum, do you think it's working, and could we be doing something different again now that we've got over this hurdle and there are co-chairs? What else could we be aspiring to in that space?
The Hauraki Golf Forum's got a really clear role about what it is and what it isn't. And my sense is there's going to be a number of things that come to play. And that are going to, I guess, need to bring it into the 21st century. If I think about, for example, the whole treaty settlement process, treaty settlement negotiations. So they're almost coming to an end, I think, in this space. The harbours conversation is still outstanding, but clearly in that space, iwi are seeking change in terms of how the Gulf is managed. And I just think with the Marine Spatial Plan, with the establishment of the Ministerial Advisory Committee, and any outcomes that they may let us know about. I'm thinking there will be changes. I've kind of got off my track of thought.
There will be changes.
There will be changes. There's just so many inputs that are going to require it.
Mm. And I think sometimes, and this is my opinion, not yours, so just make it clear, I'm not putting it on you, but I think, you know, sometimes we have to get out of our own way and be really brave to try new things and do things differently and understand that if we want to have new outcomes, we have to have new systems and new processes that don't necessarily align with the way they've all been done before, and new and brave thinking has to take place and happen.
I don't disagree. I guess I get to a point knowing that reality and knowing how long that path can sometimes be when it's in a policy or legislative sense, that often just those very practical things you can do on the ground do make a difference.
Yeah.
And I guess that was one of the, certainly wasn't the primary reason for putting the Dahui in place, but it was also that hope that, you know, just test something new and see what happens.
Yeah.
And see where it resonates. And, yeah, I think that's a critical part of change making anyway, is doing that stuff on the ground and getting some stuff done and showing and modelling it.
We've talked a little bit about your aspirations already, or you've shared some of your aspirations already. What is your biggest aspiration for Te Kapa Moana? What would be your ultimate? What do you want to see?
I want to see Te Kapa Moana, its Māori restored and sustained. Kaitiaki actively engaged in that mahi, and a truly coordinated, collaborative and integrated management of it. Now, I'd ideally like to see no management of it, but that the reality is we have all the impacts that we have and interventions that we have on the moana that we have to address them. I just want those waters clean and want those species thriving. Nothing deep. Just want healthy, you know, a healthy
just
environment.
Importantly,
want our communities thriving in it. Because I think too often we can take a Western science notion of protection and that locks people out. And I guess that's the balance. We need the ecological component, restoration, yes, but people have got to be part of it. So it is about a social, economic, environmental, cultural space rather than a purely environmental one. Because if we don't change behaviours, then we don't get change.
Those are perfect words to end on. I couldn't have asked for a better way to finish this kōrero. I just want to thank you for sharing with us today, for the mahi that you do in and around Te Kapa Moana and the mahi that you will continue to do. I cannot wait to see some of the positive effects that I know are going to come from both the rāhui and from the mahi that you and your whānau and iwi are doing in and around your rohe. So just to mahi to you, because I know that a lot of our kaitiaki, they do this mahi and they do it hard and they don't often get much recognition. So I just want to say it, tēnā koe, and thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Kia ora. It's been lovely to kōrero with you.